Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare, Jaya Radha, Damodar, Radha, Damodar, Shri Radhe. Jaya Radha Damodara Radha Damodara Shri Radhe
To the Supreme Controller, who possesses an eternal form of blissful knowledge, whose glistening earrings swing to and fro, who manifested himself in Gokul, who stole the butter that the gopis kept hanging from the rafters of their storerooms, and who then quickly jumped up and ran in retreat in fear of Mother Yashoda, but was ultimately caught. To that Supreme Lord, Sri Damodar, I offer my humble obeisances.
Upon seeing his mother's whipping stick, he cried and rubbed his eyes again and again with his two lotus hands. His eyes were fearful and his breathing quick, and as Mother Yashoda bound his belly with ropes, he shivered in fright and his pearl necklace shook. To this Supreme Lord, Sri Damodara, who is bound with his devotee's love, I offer my humble obeisances.
Those super excellent pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna's babyhood drown the inhabitants of Goloka in pools of ecstasy. So the devotees who are attracted only to his majestic aspects of Narayana and Vaikuntha, the Lord herein reveals, I am conquered and overwhelmed by pure loving devotion. To the Supreme Lord Damodar, my obeisance is hundreds and hundreds of times.
O Lord, although you are able to give all kinds of benedictions, I do not pray to you for liberation, nor eternal life in Vaikuntha, nor any other boon. My only prayer is that your childhood pastimes may constantly appear in my mind. O Lord, I do not even want to know your future as Paramatma. I simply wish that your childhood pastimes may ever be enacted in my heart.
O Lord, the cheeks of your blackish lotus face, which is encircled by locks of curling hair, have become reddened like bimba fruit due to Mother Yasoda's kisses. What more can I describe than this? Millions of opulences are of no use to me, but may this vision constantly remain in my mind.
O unlimited Vishnu, O Master, O Lord, be pleased upon me. I'm drowning in an ocean of sorrow, and I'm almost like a dead man. Please shower the rain of mercy on me, uplift me, and protect me with your nectarian vision.
O Lord Damodar, in your form as a baby, Mother Yashoda bound you to a grinding stone with rope of tying cows. You then freed the sons of Kuvera, Manigriva, and Nalakuvara, who were cursed to stand as trees, and you gave them the chance to become your devotees. Please bless me in the same way. I have no desire for liberation into your effulgence.
O Lord, the entire universe was created by Lord Brahma, who was born from your abdomen, which was bound with rope by Mother Yashoda. To this rope I offer my humble obeisances. I offer my obeisances to your most beloved Radharani and to your unlimited pastimes.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We continuing the chapters Mohini Murti bewilders Lord Shiva, and the texts that have been assigned are chapter 12, and the verses are 12 through 14. So Maharaj read verse 12 yesterday, but I'll read it since this block of verses came together. And the verse we'll chant together is text 14. So We're going to begin with text 12. Avatara Maya Drishta Ramanamasya Te Gunai Soham Tadrashtun Ichami Yate Yoshit Vapudritam. And the translation for text 12. My Lord, I have seen all kinds of incarnations you have exhibited by your transcendental qualities, and now that you have appeared as a beautiful young woman, I wish to see that form of your lordship. And here's a short purport. When Lord Shiva approached Lord Vishnu inquired about the purpose for Lord Shiva coming there. Now Lord Shiva discloses his desire. He wanted to see the recent incarnation of Mohini Murti, which Lord Vishnu had assumed to distribute the nectar generated from the churning of the ocean of milk. Text 13. Yena samohita daitya paitas chamritam suraha tadidya trakshava ayata param kotuhalam hinaha. And the translation of text 13. O Lord, we have come here desiring to see that form of your lordship, which you show to the demons to captivate them completely, and in this way enable the demigods to drink nectar. I am very eager to see that form. And text 14, which we'll chant responsibly. Shishuko vacha evam abhyartito vishnur. Bhagavan Shula Panina Bhava Gambiram Pradasya. Sorry. Girisham Pratya Basata Shri Sukho Vacha Evam Abhyartito Vishnur. Bhagavan Shula Panina Prahasya Baba Gambiram Girisham Pratya Bahasata Shisukho Vacha Evam Abhyartito Vishnur. Bhagavan Shula Panina Prahasya Pava Gambiram Girisham Pratya Basata. Please chant. Shishuko Vacha Evam Abhyartito Vishnur Bhagavan Shula Panina Asya Bhava Gambiran Giriram Prajabhasata Shishuko Vacha Evam Abhyartito Vishnur Bhagavan Shula Panina Rahasya Bhava Gambiram Girisam Pratyabhasata. Shishuko Vacha Evam Abhyartito Vishnur Bhagavan Shula Panina Prahasya Bhava Gambiram Girisham Prachabhasata. Shisuko Vacha. Evam Abhyatito Vishnu. Bhagavan Shula Panina. Rahasya Bhava Gambiram. Girisam Prachabhasata. Shisuko Vacha. Evam Abhyatito Vishnu. Bhagavan Shula Panina. Baba Gambi Namiram. Girisam Prachabhasata. And the word for word. Shisuko Vacha. Shisukadev Goswami said. Evam, in this way, abhyatito, being requested, Vishnur Bhagavan, Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Asula Panina, by Lord Shiva, who carries a trident in his hand. Prahasya, laughing. Bhava Gambiram, with serious gravity. Girisam, unto Lord Shiva. Pratyabhasana, replied. So the translation is, Srila Sukadev Goswami said, when Lord Vishnu was thus requested by Lord Shiva, who carries a trident in his hand, he smiled with gravity and replied to Lord Shiva as follows, in the purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is known as Yogeshwar. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishnaha. Mystic yogis want to acquire some power by practicing the yoga system, but Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is known as the Supreme Lord of all mystic power. Lord Shiva wanted to see the Mohini Murti, which was captivating the entire world, and Lord Vishnu was gravely thinking of how to captivate Lord Shiva also. Therefore, the word Bhava Gambiram is used here. The illusory material energy is represented by Durga Devi, who is the wife of Girisha, or Lord Shiva. Durga Devi could not captivate Lord Shiva's mind, but now that Lord Shiva wanted to see Lord Vishnu's feminine form, Lord Vishnu, by his mystic power, would assume a form that would captivate even Lord Shiva. Therefore, Lord Vishnu was grave and at the same time was smiling. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare This is a little bit of an in-between part. It's prior to many exciting events and prior to more exciting events coming, so it's a little in-between part. So I'm going to do my best to try and expand on the in-between part. So over here, Lord Shiva, he's making a specific request of Lord Vishnu, and this is his request. He says, I've seen all kinds of incarnations you've exhibited by your transcendental qualities. And now that you have appeared as a beautiful young woman, I wish to see that form of your lordship. So that's his request. And he elaborates a little bit more on his request to Lord Vishnu. And he says, "My lord, we have come here desiring to see that form of your lordship which you show to the demons to captivate them completely, and in this way enable the demigods to drink nectar. I'm very eager to see that form." So if we consider Lord Shiva's position in relation to Lord Vishnu, it's actually such that Lord Shiva is second only to Lord Vishnu. He's the most powerful demigod, and he's also self-sufficient. At the same time, which is interesting, he's also known as the greatest devotee of Lord Vishnu, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if we take those two aspects of Lord Shiva, they're very much intertwined in this request that he's making of Lord Vishnu. As a powerful demigod, he has under his control the material energy. And that's called Shakta Goraya. He's actually got very dangerous potencies. So this is Lord Shiva. So that dangerous potency of Lord Shiva is Goddess Kali or Durga. Because they're usually serving Lord Shiva, and the way they're serving him is by killing all the demons. So he's considered to have very dangerous potencies. Now, Lord Shiva's control has got a very interesting dimension, in that Goddess Kali sometimes becomes so infuriated by the activities of the demons that she indiscriminately kills all kinds of demons. So you understand why Lord Shiva's got a little bit of a dangerous potency, because this is how Goddess Kali is functioning. And there's many depictions where she's actually wearing a garland that's composed of the heads of the demons, and she's all holding in her left hand a captured head. So this is how she's actually depicted. And in her right hand, she's got what's called a gadga, or a chopper, which she used specifically for killing demons. So she becomes infuriated when the activities of the demons are so intolerable. And at that time, she just kills them wholesale. Doesn't discriminate anymore. You know, this smaller demon, bigger demon, just wipes them all out. So, and it's for this reason that Lord Shiva has to employ the energy of Goddess Kali as his dangerous duty. So he's executing his duty, and it's a pretty dangerous duty. And there's another depiction of Lord Kali, just to explain something of this, you know, fury of Goddess Kali that Lord Shiva has to temper in some way. There's another depiction where actually Goddess Kali is seen standing on Lord Shiva, and he's in a prostrate position. So this indicates that Lord Shiva literally sometimes has to fall down to try and stop Goddess Kali from killing the Asuras. So so it's interesting, taking this into account, that here it is, Lord Shiva himself is approaching Lord Vishnu, and he specifically wants to know or see that incarnation which was able to captivate the demons. in such a way that the demigods were able to drink the nectar of immortality. So it's a very intriguing request, because it was such subtle control that was exercised by Lord Vishnu to halt the Asuras from getting access to the immortal nectar. So this is Lord Shiva's request, which is interesting in the light of his usual dangerous duty of just wiping out the Asuras. He's wanting to see how Lord Vishnu managed to bring them under control. So there's that second aspect of Lord Shiva, that he's a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is in fact the secret of Lord Shiva's energy. And this secret is unbeknown to the demons. This is so because as a great devotee of the Lord, he's actually surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this means that he's able to conquer those exacting laws of material nature. And this is something of what the demons are generally dealing with. But Lord Shiva is free of that. So it's rather fascinating that he's asking to see the form of the Lord that captivated the demons, because there's a certain character that's present in the demons that makes them very reluctant to surrender to Lord Krishna. And this is said by Lord Krishna himself. One finds it in the 7th chapter and the 15th verse of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Nama duskritino mudaha prapajyante naradana maya yaprita gyana asuram bhavam asritaha. So those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest amongst mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender to me. So this is the whole mentality of the demons that's described by Krishna. And it's very interesting. Srila Prabhupada breaks down, so I'm going to go a little bit into the demons and why it's kind of fascinating, just the question that Lord Shiva's posed to Lord Vishnu, because painting the picture of what Lord Vishnu is dealing with is interesting. Srila Prabhupada breaks down this category of demons into four. And he puts it this way. There's the first category, which are known as the mudhas, or the beasts of burden. So this category is those who want to enjoy the fruits of their labor by themselves, and they don't want to part with any part of that fruit. And then there's the second category in this demoniac category, and that's the Naradamas, those who are socially or politically developed, but who have no religious principles. So a more subtle demon. So their supposed education is actually made null and void by the material energy, but that's the second category. And the third category is the maya prahita jnana, which are the learned persons. They're still more subtle entity. And it's said that their erudite knowledge, because they're extremely learned persons, that's all that learning's actually been nullified by the material energy. And then the last category, this is Srila Prabhupada breaking down, you know, the whole big body of demons. I should add that category of the erudite scholars, they actually consider the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be just a human being. So that's that category. So they can't actually see that the Supreme Lord's eternal or has a transcendental feature. And the fourth category is the Asuram Bhavam Ashrita. So these are persons who are deliberately following demoniac principles. So they're the big demons, deliberately following demoniac principles. And they're openly atheistic. They declare it. And and they even go a step further. They actually present incarnations that they've manufactured from their own mental thought process. So that's the biggest demons, or the category of the most advanced, because they're very deliberate in their opposition to Lord Vishnu. So now, the demons that were captivated by Mohini Murti, just the broad mentality is given by the words they use. So this indicates something of their mentality. So they've seen Lord Vishnu in the feminine form, but this is how they seem. They say, "Oh, beautiful girl with beautiful eyebrows, certainly Providence, by his causeless mercy, has sent you to please the senses and minds of all of us. Is this not a fact?" So they this is how they see the feminine form of Lord Vishnu. Fate has sent this beautiful woman to them, and certainly she must be there just to please their senses and their mind. This is how they sing. so that indicates, again, that certainly being opposed to any a submissiveness to Lord Vishnu, that's not present in the demoniac mentality. So now there's a response to Lord Shiva that comes from Lord Vishnu, and it says that he smiles very gravely. So it's a very serious smile that he gives in response to the request, and Srila Prabhupada explains why there's a grave smile, and that is that when Lord Vishnu heard that Lord Shiva wanted to see Mohini Murti, that form that had captivated everyone, and he started to think, oh, how could he also captivate Lord Shiva? So Srila Prabhupada, he's actually pointing out that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the controller of all mystic powers. So up ahead, and this is the part why I say this is the in-between part, we're going to actually hear how it is that we'll witness how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu in his feminine form, does utilize his mystic powers. So we have to wait for that. It's rather exciting. The interesting thing to notice here is that Lord Shiva's in a particular position where the illusory material energy couldn't captivate him. So Durga, whose whole duty has to do with keeping everyone in ignorance, meaning that their ignorance of the process of self-realization, that's her duty. She wasn't able to captivate Lord Shiva in any way. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it is that Lord Vishnu in his feminine form of Mohini Murti is actually going to be able to captivate Lord Shiva. So you see the power of Durga, that she's able to accomplish it with tons and tons of living entities, but Lord Shiva is in a separate category, doesn't affect him in the least, and Lord Vishnu is smiling because he's going to actually undertake that task to see how he can actually, in his feminine form, captivate Lord Shiva. So, now, Goddess Durga, she doesn't actually exert any influence on a devotee. And there's a particular reason for this, it's that a devotee is not allowing the mind to get the attachment to material objects because that attachment is what is not allowing for a peaceful condition, because obviously the need to possess, then the distress from losing the object. So just avoiding that keeps the devotee in a very peaceful state. So Goddess Durga doesn't have any entrance, because her entrance is where there is exactly that kind of behavior, that mental attachment to material something or other. That's when she enters and does her work to even enhance that particular aspect, so that the particular entity really remains in ignorance. That's her particular work. But she doesn't have that access with devotees, because devotees are protected from that. There's a detachment from the material. So Lord Shiva's in that position. He's, of course, extremely detached. So which leads then to the next point of what we can expect coming up in the exciting part is just looking first, every time the Lord appears, it's when there's some sort of friction that's going on between the devotees and the non-devotees. And he usually appears because he's feeling very compassionate towards his devotees. And this is mentioned in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in the second chapter, 15th verse. So here, it's a different setting. You notice it's a devotee that's requesting. So Lord Shiva, he's requesting, you know, could you show this incarnation? So the incarnation already has done the work, but Lord Shiva is saying, could you show that incarnation especially to me? So it's sort of interesting because, you know, the incarnation usually appears in order to fulfill a very important function, you know, and particularly to protect the devotees in some way. But here Lord Shiva is asking to actually see this particular incarnation that's captivated the minds of everyone. So, and Lord Vishnu responds. He actually says to Lord Shiva, okay, these are his words. I'm going to actually show that form or reveal that form, and these are his words, which was appreciated by those who are lusty. So there's a little clue that this is what the effect is on the mind of anybody who sees that particular form of Lord Vishnu. And we get this too, that it was a very successful form of Lord Vishnu that appeared, because this was the effect on the Asuras. I'm going to read what happened to them. Upon seeing the beautiful woman, the demons said, how wonderful is her beauty, how wonderful the luster of her body, and how wonderful the beauty of her youthful age. So, speaking in this way, they quickly approached her, full of lusty desires to enjoy her, and began to inquire from her in many ways. So, indeed, the incarnation appeared for that purpose, and indeed, that was the effect upon the demons. So, leading into what automatically came to mind was that there's going to be a difference with Lord Shiva versus what transpired with the demons. And we can predict this because the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a particular energy or a particular potency called Vishnu Maya. So that particular potency is going to appear. And that potency captivates the whole material and the spiritual worlds. So just as Lord Shiva has got his dangerous potency in the form of Goddess Kali, Lord Vishnu has his particular potency, which is captivating. So it entrances everyone, both material and in the material and the spiritual world. And but that Vishnu Maya acts differently according to the particular condition of the heart. So whether it's a devotee or a demon, that Vishnu Maya is acting differently. So we know that with Yasoda and Devaki, that potency of Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, is acting in a particular way, that they are completely dedicated to the service of Lord Krishna. And they don't even understand his position at all or his particular incarnation. It's just a complete devotion to him, a complete surrender to him. But the same Vishnu Maya is acting differently upon the demoniac entities such as Kamsa or Salva or the other demons. Particularly Kamsa is put into a state of complete fear and trepidation as to his own longevity by Vishnu Maya. So this potency of Lord Vishnu is acting differently at different times, and it's actually executing different purposes. So his potency is like that. It's very discriminating, and it's also being used with his particular plan of what he wants to have transpire. So here we have this position that Lord Shiva, so a completely surrendered entity, surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord, he's going to be directed by Yogamaya in some way. And this we're going to hear, how he's going to be directed by Yogamaya, because that he falls into that category of devotee, and taking into account that the potency is used by Lord Vishnu to allow for something to happen, we can understand that then that potency is going to be directing Lord Shiva in a particular way. So whatever happens, it's going to be Yogamaya that's directing him. And contrasting that with what goes on with the Asuras, because they're devoid of devotional service, they have no sense of surrender to Lord Vishnu, they get directed by Mahamaya, another potency of Lord Vishnu. And this is specifically for those persons that think that they're independent of the Lord. So we can already get a clue that whatever's going to transpire for Lord Shiva, he's going to be under the direction of Vishnu Maya, as contrasted with the demons who generally come under the influence of Mahamaya because they're thinking themselves independent of the Lord. So they're not in the protected space. They're always outside. They're at the mercy of Goddess Durga or Goddess Kali, the potencies of Lord Shiva. So, and this is described in Bhagavad Gita in 9:13. Mahatmanas tumam partha divim prakritim asritaha vajami ananya manaso nyatva bhutatim avyayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So this is going to be Lord Shiva's position. He's under the control of Daivi Prakriti, the divine nature, because he surrendered to the Supreme Lord. So that's what we can expect, knowing where he stands. So whatever transpires, if we bear this in mind, it becomes rather wonderful how everything plays itself out under the potency of Lord Vishnu. So I'll end there, since we're keeping within our usual time frame, even with the Dhammadharastika prayers. So if there's any thoughts to expand this discussion, these are just some short thoughts based on this very in-between section. So it's open to discussion if there is any.
You mentioned that Goddess Durga, her service to Lord Krishna is keeping everyone in ignorance of the path of self-realization in this age. She does a really good job. In regards to the other yugas, Satyuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, how powerful is her influence then here in this age, it's super power. She's super powerful. People are pretty ignorant of Bhakti Yoga and the science of self-realization. But in regards to the other yugas, how powerful is their potency?
That's an interesting question. The question is, it's apparent that in this particular age, Goddess Durga, because of her particular task to keep entities ignorant of the process of self-realization, it's very clear that her position or her potency is very powerful here, but how does that compare to her potency in a different age? That was the question. Well, she has a task to perform that's very specific. So where there's resistance to surrendering to Lord Vishnu, then Lord Shiva, as a great devotee of Lord Vishnu, he has Goddess Durga acting. And generally her response is to perform actions that bewilder the consciousness and make the person more immersed in their ignorance or their unwillingness to surrender, makes their suffering greater. So their suffering increases. So her particular task obviously is very apparent at the present time. I mean, when persons who are regularly going out and distributing books no doubt see this, because who can resist a beautiful picture on a cover of one of the extraordinary books of Srila Prabhupada? I mean, truly, the consciousness has to be very bewildered. So we understand that Goddess Durga is doing, as you say, a very good job to even not be able to respond to the beautiful visuals, never mind even being approached by an extraordinary devotee with, you know, clearly such a open-hearted, dedicated mood that has no exploitation in it. That the regular person is not responding to that is certainly an indication that Goddess Durga is at work. Then looking at what role does she have in a different age, let's say in Satya Yuga, where in fact persons are devotional, obviously she has much less role, because what's necessary for her to do her job is the resistance to approaching or trying to submit oneself in some way to the controller of the whole creation, Lord Vishnu. So then her role is not great. So in an age where persons are just naturally devotional and naturally in the mode of goodness and naturally conscious of Lord Vishnu and performing all their actions with the mood of submission to Lord Vishnu, indeed, Lord Shiva doesn't have to unleash his... well, he attempts to even control her a little bit, but he doesn't have to perform his dangerous duty through that potency. So indeed, her role is minimized. It just automatically works by nature of the age and the general devotional or non-devotional sentiment of the entities that are existing in that age. So sadly, we're existing in an age where she's having to work furiously.
My question is, like, is Mahamaya like actively kind of, like in Christian theology, there's an understanding where there is like devil who is actively kind of influencing the people to not approach God or something like that. But is it same in our understanding where Mahamaya is actively kind of there to not, for the people who don't desire to, you know, who are resistant to approaching Krishna, is she actively involved in kind of not allowing that to happen? Or is it more she's passive and because of their not having attraction to, you know, approach God, then they're attracted by Mahamaya?
A very interesting question. Manoj Prabhu is asking if one can make a comparison in some way with, in Christian theology, the idea that there's a devil who's actively pulling one away from, I guess, one's surrender, although the Christians, I don't know if they use that term, but one's turning one's attention to God. The attention gets taken away from God. And so Manoj is asking if Mahamaya is working in a similar way, that she's actively taking a person who's not inclined towards surrendering to God, or is she actually passively there and somehow doesn't actively intervene in the process? Well, I've heard my spiritual master say that, let's say one's in a position where one's actively attempting to surrender to the Supreme Lord and is performing acts of devotion to the Supreme Lord. The minute one slackens, like in some way, turns one's attention away, immediately she's there. Like immediately. There's not like a second that passes. She's waiting. So that's her particular duty. So we know when we perform devotional service how we're very careful to do everything on time, to do the proper mantras, to do the proper procedures with care and attention. She does her service in the same way to Lord Vishnu. She's right on hand. So somebody's slipping, she's there. So, and the influence is extremely subtle because it's a lot on the mental plane. So the thinking goes in a particular direction, she's there. And it says she bewilders and creates more illusion. So somehow her particular task is very much on the subtle plane. It's influencing thinking, and I guess it's almost like creating an atmosphere that allows for that. She allows for that to grow and flourish. I mean, I often find myself thinking that, like, Yoga Maya was sent at the time of Krishna's appearance. She was sent to Gokul to create a very pleasing atmosphere and to create an atmosphere where there was no fear for the devotees. So it's almost like Mahamaya has the opposite task. It's to create an atmosphere that enhances that illusion of enjoyment. So it appears very pleasant. For a person who's under her influence, it appears very pleasant. A person doesn't question it. It becomes very real, that mental space of enjoyment or supposed happiness. But it's actually a very distressing condition if one is actually away from her influence and is, say, back in devotional life. One understands, oh, that's a terrible state to be in. Because it's like being, I mean, Srila Prabhupada calls it, what, phantasmagoria? It's a completely illusory space. So then when you come to the reality of, like, you know, what your position is, you're subservient to Lord Vishnu, then everything stabilizes and you see things clearly. Oh, my goodness, that was terrible. So, yeah, she's actively doing her duty. And I don't know if I'd compare it to the devil, her role, because the Christian idea is always very gross. It's also often doesn't take into account the personal choice that's made. You know, that somebody's entertaining some thinking or entertaining some action or performing some action. So you don't hear the Christians go into that too much. It's more like on a gross level, black and white. But this is very subtle, Mahamaya. And the difference is she's actually performing it as a service to the Supreme Personality of God. And in the Christian theology, the opposing entity is opposed to God. So this is very different. She's actually performing service to him. It's all very cohesive, the whole system, and rather extraordinary because it's all under Krishna's control. There's nothing outside of his control, whereas in the Christian theology, you often get the idea that there's a possibility that the devil may supersede God. You know, there's tension there. And that's not the case, in at least from the Vedic understanding. Krishna is always perfectly in control and is always harmonizing everything. Yeah, and controlling his potency, because it's his potency, his energy that's, you know, being given the particular task or duty. So he's in control always. So.
So, many demons, maybe even a majority, I don't know, in terms of worship, they're explicitly worshiping Lord Shiva and Kali, Durga. So, I mean, that interaction becomes quite explicit. They're coming to her to fulfill these material desires, and then she's reciprocating and bewildering them as desired. Yet, she comes to this point, like you said, where she just kills a bunch of demons, like she gets fed up with them. Is it that, I mean, of course she's compassionate, she's a deva and she's the internal potency of Lord Shiva. So is it that she's like loses patience with them, because they are supposed to learn, right? That, I mean, of course she is reciprocating, but she's reciprocating in a way that you should come to the point of realizing that this is not working out for me. So is it that she loses patience and she just kills them? And if so, what happens after the die? Is it some benediction for them because they've been directly killed by her, I'm wondering? Or is it, you know, some hellish condition?
It's a very nice examination of the topic, thinking that the demons are worshipping Kali, and they are getting reciprocation from her, the desired reciprocation, because that's her duty to bewilder them. So the bewilderment is enhancing what they're desiring. So your question is, they're supposed to be learning something from that intervention on her part. So when she's actually doing her wiping out of the demons, are they actually getting some special benediction? Have they, because of the fact that the understanding is that there should be some learning that's happening. So, okay. It's said that, I think it's in one of the purports here, that they don't want to know much about Lord Shiva. They understand that he gives material benedictions, but they don't want to know much about him. So they instead prefer to worship Kali, who's more relatable to them. And we heard also the demons are particularly lustful, so somehow they're drawn to that form for worshipping. And her particular service, the usage of Lord Shiva's potency, is, one could say, enhancing their enjoyment, because she's facilitating the way they're thinking. So, you know, it expands that internal mental realm. It's certainly expanded, and certainly the suras we reading about here must be functioning on an extremely subtle plane. I mean, they're very advanced, that they actually even have personal darshan of Mohini Murti. So can one say that her frustration comes from them not having learned that, you know, this is all illusory? You know, is it that they're not able to understand, and that's why she immediately demolishes them, or at some point she demolishes them? Yes, she has that freedom. It's like when one's assigned a particular duty to Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu, one is very dedicated to that duty. I'm extremely dedicated, and one tries to do it very, very well to please Lord Vishnu. So in the same way, her particular service is a desire to please Lord Vishnu. There's that is there. So she does it very diligently, very precisely, very expertly, that the demons remain in illusion. Well, that's the unfortunate part. They have no choice because they do not want to acknowledge Lord Vishnu. So they, in some sense, are doomed because of that unwillingness, that hardness of heart. That there's no desire to submit to Lord Vishnu. So based on that, one would say that they're not getting a benediction. There's the only benediction that could be there is if there was acknowledgement of the necessity to seek help to move away from the illusory reality that they're residing in. If there was some recognition of it being an illusory reality. So the benediction only would come then. So because her services to Lord Vishnu, they are not acknowledging Lord Vishnu, so she can make the decision when to completely wipe them out. It's her service. She has that freedom, and she, because she's doing it in service. So no, they don't get benediction, because they're still not taking that step of acknowledging Lord Vishnu. So they're not acknowledging her master. So as long as they don't acknowledge her master, she cannot benedict. I mean, her service is to Lord Vishnu. It's not precisely, I mean, it's not, she's doing something in relation to them dutifully, but her service is to Lord Vishnu, everything she does. So every action that's performed is for Lord Vishnu, for his pleasure. So if they're not taking the proper remedial measures, no benediction is there.
Then the question comes to me, what does it mean to annihilate them? Well, she kills them, like their current body. I mean, is that an annihilation? They lose their current body, but the next body is just a continuation of their demoniac nature. So, I mean, she's just venting, I guess. You know, and then like for in her concept of time, it's just a split second later, you know, they're back in full swing. So, you know, it's kind of like, meh, you know, like you kill a bacteria or something. Well, the next minute it's there doing it, you know. It seems like frustration or something. But a split second later, they're back there, you know. So I don't, is that what it is? It's like a kind of a personality thing. I don't know.
Her personality, the frustrated aspect that causes the annihilation? That's the question?
Yeah, I mean, the primary question would be, what does it mean that she's annihilating them? She's killing their current body, but in concept of time and space, especially from her perspective, it's literally like a half a moment later that they're a super demon again, like...
Yeah, the mentality travels with the entity, so there's no relief from that. But I think it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a gradual sliding down to hell. So the next body with the same demoniac mentality, it's worse mentality. So we were getting the particular categories of demoniac mentality. So presumably the worst one is where one is actively following demoniac principles, actively being atheistic, actively rebelling against Lord Vishnu. So that would be the worst demon. So next body, one goes further into demoniac mentality. So she's still doing her duty. She continues her duty in the next body, enhancing that mentality, or if it's not directly enhancing the mentality, she's creating the illusory idea of enjoyment that's got nothing to do with Lord Vishnu, because that's the desire. So, yeah. Yeah.
So perhaps it's as if they cross a certain line at a certain point. And so she's like, oh, your next body is ready now. Like, you're ready to go further into ignorance. So, like, it's like they cross a line and she's finished with them. Like,
From this understanding that came from looking at this section, she actually comes to a point where she finds it intolerable, their actions. So it's like, as a devotee, when one hears of some very demoniac behavior, at some point, one doesn't want to know or even come close to it. It's so disturbing. You know, one steers clear of it, steers clear of the entity that's executing that demoniac behavior. I mean, she has the power to wipe out that entity. So cut off that entity's continued activity in that lifetime. And she just has that power. So maybe it's very fortunate, because sometimes when one gets exposed to demoniac behavior, the distress it causes one to the heart is so much that one thinks, how can this go on? So in her case, she can actually halt it. So the killing is, it's ending the activity of that entity in that body. So, of course, there's a time lapse, but the mentality is carried, and then it's just the question of time where the mentality is back in action. But different body and, I guess, all the things that are weighed up that make put that entity in a particular situation, but it's a decline. It's a constant decline. But there's always the option to turn to Lord Vishnu. So it is up to the entity, but she does her duty. As long as there's a desire for avoiding surrender in any way, she continues to create the illusion of enjoyment. And it's a very powerful effect that she has, because just being exposed to, even in the society we live in, the ideas that persons have of what enjoyment is, one can actually be like a little amazed. You know, the habits that people have, and they consider it happiness. But, you know, if one's looking from the side and thinking, oh, the foodstuffs that are eaten are actually bringing about disease, or the activities that are being done are opposed to religious principles, so there's actually great suffering, but the persons believe they're happy because they feel they're independent. They can make the choice. They're not understanding these strict control around every action that's done. So, yeah. Sival, you had something?
I was just going to add that there's different levels of people that are of influenced by demoniac mentality that you mentioned, that Chatur Vidhat Bhajanteman verse. There's a karmakandis that when they follow the Puranas that are in the mode of ignorance, they're directed to worship Kali. And they worship Kali, you know, and there's a procedure. And as they worship, they elevate themselves. That's the karma kandis. They're not worshiping, hold on. They're not worshiping Lord Vishnu, but they're following the instructions of the Vedas to worship Goddess Kali, because they're people in the mode of ignorance. So by doing that, they elevate themselves to the mode of passion. So they're doing that type of worship. Now, there's the very demoniac that actually they don't follow the Vedas. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada makes the mention of karma kandis or karmis, akarmis and vikarmis. The vikarmis are those who are nothing with the Vedas. Those are another level of demons. So there was the example of worshippers of Kali that wanted to sacrifice a human, and they took what is the next incarnation of Bharat Maharaj? Anyone remember? It's also the next incarnation of Bharat Maharaj that, you know, was playing, I just got a blank in my head, a fool, and they capture him, but, you know, obviously he was a pure devotee and, you know, a Mahabhagavat devotee, and they took him to sacrifice him to Goddess Kali, and Goddess Kali burst out of the deity and chopped all, you know, just destroyed them, annihilate them, just like you should say. So that's an example of someone who is some so-called worshippers of Lord Goddess Kali that are not following the proper procedures given by the Vedas, but they concocting their own thing, and they were going to sacrifice a great devotee, and then Goddess Kali just annihilate them. So in one sense, one can say is that, you know, there's different levels. So still, as you mentioned, her service is to keep them, you know, you reciprocate, which is Krishna's control. You're reciprocating with the desire to just enjoy. So people in the mode of ignorance, they drink wine and they eat meat. So they do that too. They offer those things to Goddess Kali, and they engage in what is follows. But at least those are following certain procedures, you know, and they get elevated. But the other ones, you know, they get annihilated, you know, if they approach that Goddess Kali in that way.
Thank you for making that contribution. I think it adds a response to Jaini Tagore Hari's question. So I was taking very much the category of the four demoniac entities that are refusing any form of surrender. So his question did touch on if there is direct worship to Goddess Kali. So thank you, added that there is elevation to the mode of passion from ignorance. Thank you. So thank you. This will be the end of the class. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.